Live from the American Gulf Coast, it's the Dave Nemo Show.
And thank you so much for being part of it. And you are part of it, the most important part, here on Road Dog 146. And we are going to launch right into one of our favorite sessions here on the program through the last several months, almost a year now. Bridget Blitch joins us for Protecting Your Livelihood. Tommy Rook is going to be with us as well. And we're going to be talking all things insurance. And I haven't forgotten, and they have an answer for you in terms of workman's compensation when you are at a shipper, but you're logged off duty, or any way you are logged, but especially off duty. What happens? Are you covered? Can you make a claim if you're injured? That sort of thing. So we'll take care of that real quick first, and then we'll launch into some of the other areas of concern, and in some cases, confusion and misunderstanding about insurance coverage, what you need, what you don't, and how it works. And we'll be right back.
Those highway signs, Lord, they keep me on the move. I think about giving it up sometimes and getting in a different groove. But I just let the day slide by, get going with the flow. A 4/4 beat's the only time I keep living in the rhythm of the road. Beats the only time I keep living in the rhythm of the road.
One of the best things about VizTrax, it's geared toward truckers, not techies. They have 75 resellers in the U.S. and Canada, and all their customers to prove it. The VizTrax app is certified for both Android and Apple and follow all federal, state, and Canadian rules. VizTrax supports both AOBRD and ELD, and no retraining or new hardware is necessary to switch. And VizTrax supports a wide range of hardware to give you flexibility and no audit worries with VizTrax. Don't take a risk on inferior products. Go to info@VizTrax.com.
Sean Hannity here. I've got some important advice for all of my trucking industry friends. If you're unhappy with your current ELD or fleet management system, well, you need to get Gorilla Safety on board. Whether it's compliance, safer scores, or ease of use, Gorilla Safety is your award-winning authority. One call to Gorilla Safety and you will solve all of your safety needs. Trucking is the backbone of America's economy. Don't mess around with inferior solutions. Call 833-FLEX-LOG or visit their website, GorillaSafety.com.
Good morning, the Dave Nemo Show. You're on the air. Dave Nemo here. You're on the air. Turns out you're not on the air because you're stuck in the middle of nowhere without a signal. And that's where WeBoost comes in. WeBoost increases your cell and data signals by up to 32 times, and it's made for pro drivers.
It'll help you stay connected and safe on the long haul. WeBoost works with all carriers and devices, and there are no recurring fees.
Visit WeBoost.com today to hear what you and we've been missing. WeBoost.com. And good morning again, everybody. Dave Nemo with you. We are proud to be part of Truckin' Life and proud to introduce our friend and associate, Bridget Blitch. She is a partner at Taylor & Associates Attorneys at Law. Bridget, always a great treat having you with us on the program.
Dave, it's always a pleasure to be here. Thank you so much for the privilege.
And Tommy Rook, good morning and welcome. I've talked a little bit about your background and the Motor Carrier Insurance Education Foundation earlier this morning, so we wouldn't take too much time doing all that stuff right now, but welcome.
Dave, thank you, sir. One thing that you might have missed is my father was also a trucker, so this is where I started before I got insurance.
Fantastic. Wow, that's awesome. I'll tell you what, though, I didn't go into too much detail on the Motor Carrier Insurance Education Foundation. You basically kind of teach folks in the insurance industry who provide services and insurance to motor carriers so that they will have a better understanding of the folks that they are serving. And you got that going, what, about 5-6 years ago, I guess?
Yes, sir. We're starting our sixth year. I've been doing this since 1982, but we put it all the previous programs I did through this not-for-profit foundation. And we have basically everybody who is buying trucking insurance, who are both the retail agent, the wholesale agent, and the insurance carriers have been part of our foundation. And we have people like Bridget and her partner, her Jay Keller, and others who be a part of our annual program, and we do continue. Objective was, and mine has been from day one, is explain the trucking industry to the insurance industry so the trucker was better able to buy insurance coverage at a reasonable price and what they need. And we've been successful in this area.
Wow, that is awesome. That is a needed service, that is for sure. Well, Tommy, I'm going to kind of switch gears a little bit here because you guys got a fantastic lineup of topics here this morning. But yesterday, and I'm so embarrassed, I already filed the piece of paper that I had this written down on. Unfortunately, it was the round file. So I can't remember who called in with a really good question about workman's comp. And when you are logged off duty, if that happens at a shipper or receiver and something happens, where does workman's comp fit into that?
David, Bridget, I can do this and you can do this. David, first off, work comp is for a job-related injury. When you say log off, if they're there for loading, unloading, or waiting, and those things, then that's still job-related. I actually talk about the 10-hour requirement after you've extended your hours of service, that's all job-related because you have to rest those 10 hours to start again. So as long as, and the premise you're giving me is that if they're at the insurance premises, they're loading and unloading, even though they're log off, meaning off duty, they're still job related. That's there because it's part of their job. And then work comp with pay. And if they get injured, no matter how they got injured, work comp is a no fault, and you don't have to prove negligent like you would if you had a crash and you hurt a plaintiff in those areas. There's a couple of situations, though. First, because of this question, I assume there's work comp in place. As you might know, or your audience might know, there are some states that would not require work comp. If you're, quote, owner-operator, independent contractor, you might not have comp. But if you have comp would pay for that injury as long as it is job-related, and the scenario you're giving me is it's job-related. That's always a fact-driven situation. But if your driver's at insurance, at a customer's premises, load and unload, I think that's job-related. Wouldn't you, Bridget?
Yes, I would. And just to kind of give a comparison, there's a case that I think we can draw from to give some insight on this issue. It was actually out of Ohio, and it's Word versus Cassin's Transport Company. And that was the exact inquiry in that case was the individual driver within the course of his employment? And in that situation, he was an over-the-road truck driver, and he claimed an injury when he slipped and fell in the bathroom in his hotel room while he was off duty. And in that case, the court held that there was not sufficient evidence to establish that the claimant had sustained an injury in the course and scope of employment. And the court further noted that the employer had no control over the accident scene. So I think that's just the juxtaposition to the situation where you're describing here, where we do have a driver that is on the premises, which is job related, even if he's logging off duty.
Fantastic. I actually, you guys, if you were with us yesterday listening, you witnessed a miracle. I actually answered that question, but I wanted to make sure. And when I knew you guys were coming on, I said I was going to ask you guys, and I was actually right. So I can't believe it. But it's more of a common sense thing, too, I think. But, you know, when it comes to the law, sometimes common sense doesn't really play very much of a role, does it?
Well, you never want to take anything for granted, that's for sure, Dave.
That is for sure.
It's scary.
Well, let's talk about something else that's kind of scary. And it's the increase in insurance costs. ATRI did a study on this. They study, you know, the big ticket items in the trucking industry, whether it's congestion or hours of service or anything like that. And insurance costs are increasing. And I know that's kind of a place that you guys really want to kind of talk about here this morning.
Dave, first off, Dan Murray always teaches at our conferences, has for the last 7 or 8 years. I know he's a friend of yours, but he talks about these studies and all. I use these studies in the talks I do just to let the audience in the insurance industry understand the norms and this report they have, what it costs $1.59 a mile, and those kind of things, letting them understand the cost of doing the motor carrier staying on the road. The cost of insurance has definitely gone up. And the bottom line reason is it's costing insurance carrier money to insure a truck. The industry is, contrary to popular belief, it is a for-profit, and they're owned by businesses who want to put their assets and expose their assets to places they can make money. And since 2010, the insurance industry has lost money almost every year. Why? Well, fatalities are up about 12%, and injuries are up about 49%, and crashes are up about 59% based on the latest study I have. And then you have the nuclear verdicts, where the verdicts over $100,000 have doubled in that period of time. So the bottom line is costing more money to pay for the damage done by a truck. And because it costs more money, that cost has to be spread. The one thing that some of your audience might not understand is how the insurance industry works, and that is they accumulate all the premium and all the losses. And even though you are a motor carrier who has not had any crashes, that's very favorable. You should get a favorable rate. But you're part of the pool because you're pulling your money with other motor carriers' money into the insurance industry to pay the claims. So, in fact, we share that. That's the old principle 101 of insurance. We take 100 risks and determine how many crashes they're going to have, what those crashes are going to cost, and then spread it over the 100, even though only 2 or 3% of those people actually have the crashes. So the bottom line is they're losing money in this industry. Every report I read and we talk about is losing money. And I think that actual report showed the increase of about 17.5%, Dave, if I'm not mistaken. I don't have that report in front of me. And Dan Murray called me about that. But the bottom line, it just costs money. And Bridget can talk about the nuclear verdicts where the cost has just gone up horrendously. And we can talk about some things that are affecting this in a few minutes. Bridget, do you have any thoughts besides that?
Yeah, and I think it just goes into the risk analysis, too, that when you have either new entrants or existing insureds in the market, it's a struggle for them because underwriters are taking such a very careful look at these entities because of this high risk. So it puts a burden on the insured motor carrier to make sure that they're doing everything possible to get the best premium and to get through the gatekeepers or the underwriter in the insurance industry.
And that gets back to them protecting their assets, Dave. And Bridget brings the point. One of the things the insurance carriers look at is the past history of the person they're insuring, the motor carrier. And they look at those past histories and say, okay, this insured had these kind of activities in the past, cost these claims here. So how do I take their past history and interpret what you're going to do in the future? Because when I charge a premium, when insurance companies charge a premium or something, it's to pay for those actions in the future. So if you have no past history, then the insurance companies have a difficult time to interpret what you're expecting to do in the future.
Some companies
That's when you, if you are a new entrant, and I talk to a lot of folks that are building their business model, they're going to start one truck, one driver, and get into the market. You know, you start small so you can get into that insurance market. But if you wanted to start big, it's a struggle, right? Because you've got more units, you've got more risk. So it's an issue out there. And Tommy, if you want to talk about the struggle with new entrants in particular, just because you don't have that history.
Well, that's the problem. And there's two folds to this. First off, Dave, I've said often that my father started with one truck. He ended up having a fleet hauling pickles and flowers. But if he, you know, he'd have a difficult time today with one truck to get started at an economic level that most people can live with. And again, that's that past history. For the people we're talking about, if they have a past history driving, like from a motor carrier as an owner-operator, or in some cases, even when the insurance companies look at it and they're moving from a intrastate, meaning a state-only regulation, to an interstate, meaning interstate regulation. The insurance industry really only looks at, to start with, is the 91X filing, the proof of financial responsibility required by the FMCSA if they have an MC number. And they look how many years they've had that number up there in their name. And if it's different than that, if they've not had one because they work for someone else, or they were exempt hauler, or they were intrastate, then the motor carrier can bring that information to an agent who understands what we're talking about. And that agent can then tell the insurance carrier the history of that motor carrier and sometimes overcome some of the problems of, quote, the new entries as such. So it's a lot understanding. And the first suggestion I have is make sure your insurers seek out agents who understand their business. And that becomes difficult because they're your messenger, that retail agent's your messenger to their insurance provider of your insurance activities and history and why they want to be or should provide insurance to this, to that motor carrier.
So Tommy, we have a lot of the audience that wants to have their own authority and grow their trucking business. So to recap, if they're currently an owner operator, they own their own truck, but they have not yet applied for their authority, the takeaway is, one, associate yourself with an insurance agent that's familiar with the industry so they can go out and get a market for this new entrant. But one of the things we've also talked about, too, is what about purchasing an MC number from an aged motor carrier? Do you have any insight on whether that's a viable process for a new entrant to get any leverage into the industry?
Bridget, you asked me this question a couple of weeks ago, and since you asked me that question, I have been in front of an audience of almost 40 insurance providers at our advanced underwriting class that we did in Orlando three weeks ago. And everyone to the audience said, it makes no difference. That's not going to help. They're all going to look at that individual because now they're going to look at that history of the MC number. If it's in a different legal entity, then we insure the legal entity. We insure the people who own the assets, not who owns that, not the name that number's in. If they have history, what I suggest in this, in these areas, is they can take the PSP, the pre-employment screening program. As you know, motor carriers have access, drivers have access to their own. This is when we're starting with one truck and now I'm starting on my own. They can take that PSP to their retail agents who understand this, and that will show their past history on the highway. So you got the MBRs that they have, you got the past history on the highway. Again, they cannot be used in employment, but since it is the driver's PSP and the driver seeking insurance using that PSP to prove their past history, then what I hear from you lawyers and others, that is acceptable, not a violation of the Fair Credit Reporting Act. But that shows that history. One of the main concerns, though, also for a new entry, Bridget, is what's their income? A lot of motor carriers who don't have the experience of paying for maintenance and paying for the cost on the road don't realize the cost of doing business. And that's a big part of it. Going back to the study that that Dave's talked about, that ATRA did, for example, it cost about $1.60 a mile. Again, it's a little higher right now because the fuel cost has gone up about 50 cents a gallon since that study was done. But in that case, then insurance generating about $210,000 a year. So it's costing them just to keep the truck on the road $10,000 or $11,000 every month as they go through the recyclable receivables. And so if they haven't prepared for that receivable, if they haven't prepared to pay those costs, if they don't have relationship with shippers that give them good revenue, then even though the first 2 or 3 months, 6 months, they might be successful, but when that tire blows or when they need to repair the tire or repair the engine or something like that, that's then when they fail. So this is a part also. It's not only can they drive a truck, can they operate a truck, but can they run a business? And so the more information they bring to the agent that shows that the person who's making this application for insurance understands the business and has a good business plan, the better the results will be in getting a proper price and something they can afford, maybe.
Wow, that's
so,
good
honey,
advice
well,
right there.
Would you say that it would be a good stepping stone to start as an owner-operator, at least onto the authority of a motor carrier to start to build some of that history?
Bridget, two reasons. It depends on the financial worth. Obviously, you need a history on the road, and as you're well aware of in the conferences that you've been a part of, that the insurance carriers do not like to ride a driver who hasn't had at least 2 years experience and is at least, 23 years of age. We use the thing, you've got to have an interstate CDL of 2 years. That makes you 23 years of age. And so a lot of the larger fleets can have driver training and have this kind of stuff and give those right brand new drivers history. So if that most insurance carriers you deal with are not going to insure that driver without history unless they're affiliated with a motor carrier who has a good training program. And a lot of times that motor carrier has assumed some of the responsibility because they have purchased a deductible or they have a participating plan, meaning that they'll pay for some of their losses out of their own pocket and the insurance companies don't pay. So they got to start somewhere in that area. Now, once they have that history then, Bridget, then they can take that history to the insurance carrier. One of the other things the insurance carrier is concerned about, and you already alluded to this, is that you don't start with a new entry with 20 trucks or 30 trucks. You start with one. I mean, most of the people who are willing to write new entries look at, yes, we'll write someone one truck, but we will not let them add another truck during the year because we don't know who they add. So that's an owner-operator. Owner-operators are the backbone of the insurance of the trucking industry. Totally agree with that part of it. However, when a motor carrier with the authority owns it all, hires an owner-operator to now work for them, the insurance carrier's concern is who's that owner-operator. We underwrote the motor carrier, but now we've got someone with only one truck, now the second truck. We've got to underwrite that second truck just like it is the only truck. And a lot of times the insurance carriers aren't comfortable with that kind of a growth. And again, can they manage the growth? One of the persons at the conference, or the meeting I had 2-3 weeks ago in Orlando, this advanced underwriting, made the comment is when I asked him the question, what's the difference in this owner-operator when they work for this insurance, this motor carrier as an owner-operator, and they have 1 million miles of free, no crashes, now they're on their own. Why do they make a worse risk? And his comment is he's a loss prevention person from a major insurance carrier. Said that when they were working for this other this motor carrier, they weren't worried about eating and paying their truck payments and keeping the family happy. Now that they're out on their own, they have these other worries on top of the normal worry of operating the truck.
So having that experience as an owner operator, it is a good stepping stone for our audience out there that's looking to grow into their own trucking operation someday.
Yes, it just got to be a business plan and grow with some kind of an orderly plan and have a business plan on how their growth is happening. Yes, Bridget, you got to start somewhere. That's the easiest place.
So when you go to buy a truck, people want to know, well, can you handle the payments? Can you make sure that you'll be a viable company? Now that, again, as you say, you've got all of the household expenses kind of wrapped in here, although you want to keep them absolutely separate, it's still kind of the same thing. And what I'm hearing is that insurance is maybe even more so, more concerned about the viability and future plans of a single truck operator getting his or her own authority, moving in. It's a real all-inclusive, almost like a life study, it seems, Tommy, in terms of, you know, how you need to be able to work with these folks and how they will work with you to assure your success. They don't want you to go off a cliff, and they sure don't want to go off a cliff with you, I guess is the bottom line there, huh?
Well, it's a problem in non-payment and canceled policies midterm. That's a cost insurance company doesn't want to bear. It's a cost now if you're not making enough revenue. Are you going to push the envelope? We understand the discussion of the electronic log devices that we might or might not get involved in here. But the problem with the owner-operators is they tend to have pushed those here to go faster. Do you understand your business? So it comes not only I don't, not only I need the money to make my truck payments and to make my insurance payments and feed my family, it's if I'm lacking money, what do I do to cover up for, to make up for that lack? And a lot of times they push the envelope by going faster. They ignore some of these problems that need to be done. And all those are the concern of the insurance carrier, because all those can lead to crashes.
And that envelope is no longer made out of paper. It's like a steel box with a padlock on it. So, Bridget Blitch, Tommy Ricker with us. When we come back, we'll go to phones. If you've already talked to Grace, stay there.
Back to the Dave Nemo Show.
And, of course, it's protecting your livelihood. Bridget Blitch is with us, and she is a partner at Taylor & Associates Attorneys at Law. And Tommy Rook is with us as well. And Tommy heads up the Motor Carrier Insurance Education Foundation. And the phones are all full, as you can well imagine, Bridget and Tommy. So why don't we take some calls here? And Nutty Buddy is our first caller up in Alabama. Or over in Alabama, I guess I should say. Good morning, Nutty Buddy, and you're on with Bridget and Tommy.
Nutty Buddy, can you hear us?
Hey, Nutty Buddy, good morning. I think we're having a problem. We'll put Nutty Buddy back on hold, and we'll go to Texas, and we'll talk to Dennis. Hey, Dennis, good morning.
Good morning. I have a comment.
Good morning, Dennis.
How you doing? I have a comment, and I'm glad to hear that you guys are the educational part of the insurance side of things. I'd like for you to put out to the industry, to the trucking industry and to the insurance industry, for the agents that don't understand or don't know motor carrier rules, regarding MCS 90, any motor carrier that is a for-hire carrier traveling interstate is required to have and if they're hauling a fuel oil or something that like their cars, something that requires fuel or batteries to haul, they come under the hazardous materials regulations for insurance purposes only. Their MCS 90 must reflect $1 million. A lot of the insurance agents don't like or tend to refuse to give the carriers that. They only give them the $750,000 that they think is required, but there is a specific regulation at the Part 387 that requires them to have $1 million coverage when carrying vehicles that operate on fuel or diesel or, you know, batteries. And I'd just like to have the industry better educated. I actually do compliance reviews on motor carriers, and I feel bad whenever we have to shut them down because they don't have the correct level of insurance.
Dennis, let me ask this, and Dave and Bridget. What the insurance industry does, we preach MCS 90s. I spend 2 hours on that during my presentation to understand what it is and what the requirements are. But what you're missing is most of the policies that are being issued have $1 million worth of coverage. Where the insurance carrier starts with is what is the insurance requirement based on the provided the insurance requirement as governed by the FMCSA on the licensed insurance website. If the licensed insurance website only requires $750, then the 91X filing would only represent the $750. MCS 90 would only represent the $750. In other words, that's the purpose of being legal. In that part, totally agree with you that at inspection time, if they're hauling anything hazardous, you mentioned batteries or even the fuel and equipment and all, then at inspection time, then they might need $1 million. And most insurance carriers that I deal with, and when I talk about them, I talk about that $750 might not be adequate at inspection time because FMCSA does not do a good job screening the commodities that the motor carrier has told them they're hauling. Or, for example, the motor carrier made a mistake, like my son-in-law, which they said I haul building material, but yet I know he has a skid loader that he hauls sometimes behind that truck, so that would require $1 million. In those cases, most insurance carriers we deal with will be willing to raise it to $1 million once the government says they need $1 million. But all insurance carriers are reacting to is what the government says is required.
Dennis, thank you so much for the call. Thanks for bringing that up, too. That's an important factor. There's no question about that. Bridget Blitch is with us, Tommy Rook, and we are going to head up to Illinois right now. And Dan is with us on the program. Dan, good morning and welcome to the show.
Good morning, everybody. I got a question. I know every one of us, we have four-wheelers outside of our jobs. Why are you talking about the industries suffering for the loss of money? Why don't we tie our cars into the industry of the trucking? And we don't get no lower rates to our insurers, our private insurers for our four-wheelers. Why, with us being truck drivers and we need transportation to get back and forth, that relies on our cars, our four-wheelers, but it's not tied in, but our license is still tied into the CSA and everything if we get pulled over or anything, but we can't catch a break on our personal insurance for our four-wheelers. Why don't the insurance company and the trucking get tied in with the CDL drivers with their four-wheelers if you're looking for extra money? Wouldn't this be a better way of getting money for the industry to bring down the cost of accidents and everything else that's going on, because the majority of our four-wheelers are just sitting in the parking lots anyhow while we're out on the roads, but we still need insurance.
Tommy, you want to take the first step with that?
Dan, the problem is that the four-wheelers are being used for personal vehicles, and maybe you are mature and have a driver, but we don't know if you have children or not. It is my position and most insurance carrier position not to insure a personal use vehicle on a commercial auto policy. It always ends up costing the motor carrier money in the long run, both insurance and others. It's far less costly to insure that personal vehicle on a personal vehicle policy versus the commercial policy just because of the way the rates are set. So I understand your question, but it's not going to be one that's going to float within the industry. They don't want that personal exposure, who the companies are geared to riding trucks.
All right.
And like we talked about, the concern being is these underwriters and all the factors that they're looking at before they make a decision to give that insurance, underwrite that risk, right? So that opens up a whole other area of inquiry. And we're looking at when we're insuring a power unit, we're insuring a vehicle through an entity that's regulated through the government. So certainly understand your point, and it's a great question to bring up.
Thank you so much, Dan. The separation between church and state is not as strong as the separation between personal and commercial. You know, it's and it should be that way, really. It's for your own viability. When you start breaching that wall between personal finance and business finance, both of them go downhill pretty quick. We're going to take a quick break here. We'll be right back with more calls, and we're going to get into some more issues, too, concerning the trucking industry, the insurance industry, and, of course, the legal implications. We'll be right back.
Now the line's on the highway. Have got a much brighter glow as we go roaring down the road, and me staring at little sign that reads, "Giddy up, go."
We were thinking that your fleet owner may not know that Epic View can provide DirecTV in your truck for a small fraction of the normal cost. Drivers everywhere are coming together to let their fleet owners know about this awesome opportunity. Never miss another NASCAR race again. The Daytona 500 is February 18th. Catch that movie you've heard about. Keep up with the Kardashians. Okay, maybe not. But now, just like at home, anything can be recorded and watched later on your downtime. Bottom line, no more missing out on your favorite shows and sporting events. And it's easy. Here's all you do. Go to tvformytruck.com, fill in your name, your fleet's name, your dispatcher's email, click submit, and that's it. Your truck is about to feel more like home. That's tvformytruck.com, tvformytruck.com. Stop.com.
Howdy, folks. Homer Hogg here, Director of Technical Development for TA Truck Service. Little things matter big when it comes to your truck's maintenance. Things like your engine and cabin air filters. Knowing when to get these filters serviced is vital to your rigs and your health. A filter check should be part of your regular preventive maintenance. And guess what? We'll make it easy for you. Right now at TA Truck Service, you can save $30 on an engine or cabin air filter installation when you purchase any oil change. Talk about keeping your rig and your wallet in tip-top shape. Only at TA Truck Service.
TA Petro. Full service means at your service.
Valid through February 28, 2018. No coupon required. Discount applied at time of purchase. Air filter purchase and installation must be redeemed with the oil change transaction, not at a later time or date. Some exclusions may apply.
We're going to get right back to calls and conversation on protecting your livelihood with Bridget Blitch. Bridget, of course, is a partner at Taylor & Associates Attorneys at Law. And Tommy Rick is with us on the program, of course, this morning. And Tommy is heads up the Motor Carrier Insurance Education Foundation. He's been in the insurance business, starting in trucking, though, since the 1980s. Now, let's head to Florida, where you are, Bridget, and Philip is with us on the line. Hey, Philip, good morning, and welcome to the program.
Good morning. Good morning, Bridget, Tommy.
Hey, Philip, good morning. How are you?
I'm doing great, Bridget. How about yourself?
Good, doing great.
Great, great. I've got a question for Tommy. You and I have talked about this before, expanding and using owner-operators, you know, through Sunshine, through the brokerage. And I'm running into a problem that Tommy talked about, getting people that has been lease owner-operators, getting them to get their own authority and then come work through the brokerage. Well, they're running into the problem. I got two trucks particularly. They've been trucking for 20, 25 years as lease operators. How can I get an insurance company to look at their record as a owner-operator through a lease program so when they go in as a first-time buyer, it's not stopping them from being a first-time buyer with their own authority? And then that helps me, I think, with my CSA score when they're their own identity and they're not infringing on my identity.
Well, Phil, I got to draw back to you, make sure we get the right answer to your question. First off, you're talking about brokerage and you're talking about them working for you under your ID number. That's two separate situations.
No, Tommy. No, I'm sorry.
Okay.
I want them to have their own. I want them to have their own MC.
Well,
okay, and not using my.
The way they have their, and we teach this here because I see more and more motor carriers wanting the owner-operator to have their own primary coverage. And
right.
In that case, the reason that's advantage to you as a motor carrier, as I teach, is one of two factors, and you just added a third one that's important also. The first factor is that you have now a retention, so you're trying to push some of the dollar cost of claims down to the owner-operator versus on your retention plan. The second part, it makes that owner-operator more independent. I've just read some cases, and Bridget knowing this, about misclassification of owner-operators, and the more cost the owner-operator bears, the more you can say you're independent. The third one is the CSA scores, and I use that reverse, Phil. What I say is this owner-operator is the best one to write in this area because you look at their individual history, which would be their MC, which would be their driver's license, and also their CSA, PSP scores, which you can provide or they can provide. Now they have their own coverage, but now since they're working under your operation, in other words, with your DOT number on the side, we can also look at how you're managing them with your CSA scores. So I actually talk about that being a favorable situation to do that and the reason why. There is an endorsement that we'd want to add, additional insured lessee, the 2312 endorsement that would get on the owner-operator's policy to guarantee that owner-operator, if the insurance gets canceled, you'll be notified for 30 days. so that you know that their insurance is still in force unless the carrier lets you know. But Phil, I agree with you. That's a model that we see happening. It's a model that most insurance carriers and agents who understand what you said can get it done. So this is how I teach it.
Yes, sir. Well, you know, like you said, I'm trying to cut back some of my expenses on the insurance. You know, get them independent. I don't have to carry them on my.
Right.
I just load them, you know, through the brokerage instead of through the company of Philip Williams and Sons. I load them through the truck brokerage end. Now,
well,
I feel like
you
I'm making more
last
money
year,
instead
of. Conference.
Pardon me?
You were in our conference last year then, right?
Right.
Yes.
Right.
At the foundation, yes. At the
foundation, right. You're on our panel to start this off, and I actually have used your comments often in the other things.
And I
understand.
I heard you make mention
it,
earlier.
Yes, sir.
I heard you make mention earlier that some insurance companies are have it to where I have to cover some of their insurance, you know, like them being a first-time buyer. Did I understand that right?
No, you didn't understand that right. They'd be standing on their own in the situation that you're talking about. And I understand why you're doing that model. And again, we talk about that model. The only wrinkle in this model is, are you giving that owner operator enough additional revenue to pay the additional $5,000, $6,000, $7,000 a year? That's the only question that you have to work out individually with your owner operator to do that. But that's a model that we talked about, Phil. And again, you know how to contact me if you want more information, and I know who your agent is, so we can talk about that too.
Right. And you know, we was at the conference this past October. I didn't put two and two together with who you were. I used to work for your dad.
Really?
Yes, sir.
I've had this happen before. That's an
yes,
interesting
sir.
Thing, Phil. Okay.
Yes, sir. He was
part of it.
Quite anyway, a guy.
So you know that. You know I was born in the blood. Trucking runs through my blood. You know that.
Yes, sir.
Dave, we're all friends. The world gets a little bit smaller every day.
I'll tell you what, I love it when people meet up, but this happens quite a bit on the program through the years, so that is very cool. Philip, we have to keep moving here, as you can understand, I'm sure. Thank you so much for calling, and again, another great point to bring up. Bridget, one of the things that I know you wanted to discuss here this morning is how some lawyers, quote unquote, and you certainly not you, are using CSA to get money when drivers do nothing wrong. What up with that?
Yes, right. So I had to make sure that was clear. I'm on the defense side here. But, and this, I want Tommy to bring his insight too on this. But the concern and what we're seeing is that these plaintiff lawyers, right, they're going to look at every single aspect of the trucking company, and they're going to try to find some fault, even where the driver and the motor carrier did nothing wrong to cause that accident. And so part of just making sure we have a healthy trucking operation means that we're looking at our safety scores, and we're doing everything possible to ensure that we are not going over threshold on any one of our basic categories, right? Our maintenance, our hours of service. We've talked about that in the past. And so what is happening?
Bridget, can you hear us? Tommy, can you hear us? Well, my goodness, we just lost connection. Ah, boy. We have lost connection with Bridget and Tommy.
Or seen from afar where this has happened.
Well, from a time standpoint, Bridget, obviously I have the number of cases I used when I teach. There was one that was involved up in the New England where there was an hours of service violations, and their expert witness and all quoted the warning letter to FMCSA saying that they were operating unsafe, even though the driver had only worked 30 minutes that day and had clearly slept 10 hours. An article that I quoted from the scores that from the crash it had, it says plaintiff's attorneys have mastered the art of demonstrating how trucking companies are negligent and carriers when it comes to safety. And this is what these plaintiff's attorneys are bringing up. And so the CSA score starting 2010, and Dave, I think we can use that as a benchmark when all this started, has been good and bad. It's been good because it's made the motor carrier safer. Unfortunately, in the last year and a half, that safety has kind of hit a plateau, and actually there's more crashes now. But the second part of it, we also have used it for the insurance industry to have an underwriting standard to look at, but it's also given the plaintiff's attorneys an opportunity to use this negligence. So the positive part we're talking about is that an agent needs to understand how important those scores are. They need to relate to insurance carriers, insurance agents who will help them with their scores. If they're a small motor carrier and have a problem with the scores, they're going to pay an extraordinary amount of money because of those past histories, even though they did not have any crashes. The other thing they need to do is put like event recorders in their equipment, the cameras up front. This will help oversee some of these safety violations and control what the insurance does. So the insurance carriers like that. Even if the insurer does something wrong, what we don't understand is if we know that up front, it's going to save us money for the cost. In other words, we don't pay Bridget to defend us. We start stuck about the negotiation of settlement. And so those CSA scores, because they're being used against the insurance carrier, a lot of times, Bridget, you talk about the mediation where they're afraid to bring it to court when it's brought up in the mediation part of it, where it might or might not be even admissible in the court cases. But it has become something that both plaintiff's attorneys have used to inflate their judgments, and the insurance carriers are using it as one of the core underwriting considerations.
Right. No, and that, you know, and there's so many different issues that come up with this the CSA process. And one of the things I'm doing is I'm actually co-authoring an article with attorney Gene Zipperly, who does also catastrophic defense. And one of the questions that we're asking is, with this new crash preventability program that the FMC has put up, what happens if you get a determination from the FMCSA or from your state analyst that the crash was preventable? What impact would that have in a civil proceeding? So it's really important, and one of the things I always focus on is that the motor carrier work with their team, right? Their insurance team, their agents, their qualified counsel, their tax advisors, and really looking at all aspects of their operation, because these little issues come up and they become significant ones, right? And there's angles that we got to make sure that we're doing everything possible to protect our insureds, and that were the motor carriers.
Bridget and Tommy, thank you so much for being with us here. Boy, I'll tell you what, education is the key word in your company, Tommy, Motor Carrier Insurance Education Foundation. We certainly got an education this morning. Can't thank you enough for being with us, Tommy Rook. And Bridget, as always, great to have you. Looking forward to, holy cow, our March get-together here on the radio. Bridget Blitch from Taylor & Associates. Bridget is a partner there at the law firm. And that's going to wrap up Protecting Your Livelihood. Ever change trucking jobs? Notice how looking for work is a full-time job itself, and you feel like a mushroom? The Driver Pulse app from 10th Street keeps you in the loop. Driver Pulse helps you land a driving job faster and easier than ever. And you're not just finding jobs. You're connected to the recruiting department of over 2,000 carriers, putting you in the driver's seat. Your profile helps you find carriers that fit your needs. And the Driver Pulse autofill makes it easy, and drivers love it. Download the free Driver Pulse app today. 18 wheels rolling through the night. Sometimes I wonder about this crazy, lonely life. I want to thank Tommy and Bridget again for being with us on the program. Thank you for listening, and thanks for calling in. All right, news and weather coming up in the next couple of moments, so stay tuned for that. Right here on Road Dog 146.